Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Well, hello and welcome to the Co-op. I am your host, Matt Tyson. With me, as always, is our co-host, Rebecca Bratton Weiss. We've been away for a little while because I think we've both been just exponentially busy. Yeah, like you've had a lot going on, haven't you, Rebecca?
Totally overwhelmed. Yeah. This past month was nuts.
Yeah, it was.
And next month will be, too.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, yeah, you know, it comes and goes, and we get bogged down with some stuff sometime, but we're glad that we're able to get back and hopefully stay, you know, get back into the routine and be a little bit more consistent, or at least try to find the time to. A lot's happened since the last time that we posted an episode, and the thing that we're going to talk about tonight, pretty much the entire time, is the same thing that a lot of people are talking about right now, is the issue of gun violence, of course. And you know, there was a we're recording this about a week or so after the shooting at the in Parkland down in Florida. Someone stormed into a high school and murdered 17 people. The big, of course, this has ignited a huge movement across the country. It seems like we've had more. It seems like we've had more motivation and more momentum forward as far as doing something about this issue, this thing that keeps happening. We've made, or at least it seems like more people are starting to jump on board with trying to approach this thing and trying to do something about it, and possibly even, you know, considering the some common sense gun legislation, which has been. If you've been following politics in America and gun politics for, you know, the past forever, you know that it's been a very difficult plight for a lot of people, especially after the 2012 shooting, which, a man stormed into an elementary school and using the same weapon that was used in the Parkland shooting as has been used in multiple mass shootings, and murdered 26 children. This one... You know, it doesn't hurt any less, and they happen so much, and you just still, I don't know. What do you think, Rebecca? It's been difficult. A part of me feels, you know, part of you wants to feel almost sort of jaded, but yeah. The other part of you, it still feels very fresh. Just, you know.
Well, it's. I feel like we are at a breaking point, and I think the last time we talked about the. Because it keeps happening. The last time we talked about this, we said we're not going to stop talking about it, and then I think we sort of made the wry observation that probably we weren't going to have a chance to stop talking about it anyway, because it was going to keep coming up in the news. And it seems like there was a kind of obstacle course of objections that needed to be past, and this is why I love the internet and all of the things that people complain about the internet and social networking and memes and blogs, because this is where people come together and they counter the bad arguments of the gun lobby. This is where we start coming together and saying, wait a minute, actually we should politicize it, because that's what they said over and over and over again. They said it's too soon, you can't talk about it, don't politicize it. And at first, because we're decent human beings who don't believe in, you know, killing people or being offensive, we were like, okay, well, we won't, we'll wait. And then we started to realize that this was actually a really bad idea, and it was playing into the hands of gun fetishists. And I think a lot of other people did, and it's like this tremendous awareness has suddenly struck that we've been allowing ourselves to be manipulated by our own sense of decency.
Mm-hmm.
That our own sense of decency said, well, don't talk about it. But now we're saying, no, we do need to talk about it. And what's more, the survivors of the last shooting are begging us to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so are the parents of the children killed at Sandy Hook. So this whole idea that this mysterious undercover anti-gun group is using the suffering of other people is really quite inaccurate. It's, in fact, the gun lobby that's using the suffering of other people. And, so I know what you mean about being jaded, but at the same time, I feel like I'm really seeing the possibilities of change.
Well, I hope... I don't know. I feel almost sort of embarrassed or I don't know. The last few mass shootings that we've had prior to this one happened in settings that, you know, primarily affected, you know, adult goers, you know, people who were, you know, mm-hmm. it was concerts, it was nightclubs. You had some, you had that, that got college shooting. And I think either,
right.
Okay, I think it was, it's sad. I'm getting my mass shootings confused. we've had school shootings, and it's interesting to me that the adults and the people that lead this country, the people that run this country, the people that are in charge of things, the people that pay the taxes, that vote for the people, that that make the laws, that we couldn't be half as impactful as these children have been in getting people to talk about this and we should be ashamed of that, I think. And I think it's incredible that these kids have stood up, you know. Sort of like what you mentioned a second ago, the people that look at this and talk about how, you know, it's suddenly there's this conspiracy that, you know, who's coaching these kids? Who's telling these kids? Who's, you know, who's paying these kids? Right. Who's funding this? Who's behind this? And it's like, you know, it's not. You know, it's there's nothing like that. You have a bunch of kids who just happen to, I don't know, maybe it's because they're children. Maybe it's because the children, you know, children and younger kids tend to see the world differently than adults do. Mm-hmm. They tend to see things in a little bit more of an objective lens than we do. You know, and they really do. You know, I mean, it's true. You know, kids, you know, and younger people tend to see things a little bit more of a black and white situation. And they're just able to look at this and go, hey, this is messed up.
Yeah.
People shouldn't be able to do this. People shouldn't just be able to go out and get one of these. These high powered semi-automatic rifles with a large clip that allows them to walk into a room, mow a bunch of people down. People should be able to do that. This shouldn't be able to happen. We should be able to go to school safely. And so they use social media. They got organized and they did something about it. And I applaud that. And that's what should be happening. It's insane to me that we, as the adults, the people that run this country, people that, like I said, that vote, that pay the taxes, that elect the people, that make the laws, that we can't get over all this stupid bickering over. I don't know, these party line interpretations of the Constitution and this, that we let all this other crap get in the way of just something that is so obviously and objectively right and wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, a friend of mine wrote a guest piece for my blog in which he pointed out that this is the world that these kids have known.
Right.
And like, I'm Gen X, so I grew up kind of getting a tail end of the whole, you know, fear of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Russians were still going to bomb us. But, and I was homeschooled, so I didn't have to worry about school shootings. But no one was worried about school shootings at that point. And, you know, then we enjoyed a period of relative stability in the Clinton 90s, and the experiences of upheaval and violence that we've had have been kind of like, well, those were abnormal and they didn't affect us, so let's go back to our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for these kids, this, you know, America has been at war their entire lives. They've been born into a post 9/11 world in mm-hmm. which they are constantly having updated, you know, terrorist threats. And of course the fear of violence in schools. There are so mm-hmm. many threats. Just for every shooting we hear about, there are so many bomb threats and shooting
right?
threats.
Yeah.
And so we're saying to ourselves, oh, well, you know, we can ignore this. But for them, it's, I mean, it's got to be like they're in a kind of war zone, mm-hmm. and they're now saying enough's enough. And it is shameful that their elders didn't protect them, that their elders thought mm-hmm. that this was an acceptable way for them to live. I think that's sad.
Yeah, in the name of what, too? Like, you know, in the name of what? Like, you've got this, like, look, here's my thing about, like, I think about this a lot, especially when this debate comes up. I think a lot about, like, the Constitution, the Second Amendment, these laws and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's definitely okay for a nation to have sort of, like, a baseline and say, like, this is, like, what we're founded on. Like, this is our baseline of, like, you know, the thing that brings us together. But the problem that America runs into is that we don't really have some of the same things that other countries have. America is a melting pot, and we don't have one sort of native lineage that we can all, like, revert back to thousands of years. You know what I mean? Right. we get 300 years in the past, and we have to trace all of our lineage, our family, back to European countries. You know, right. So the thing that brings America together is, it's not nationalism, and it's not some sort of, like, shared cultural or tribal experience, ethnic identity. It's something different. You know, we always refer to it in America as the great experiment. And so, and people argue that the thing that we, you know, that we're founded on is those laws, is the Constitution. And I agree with that, but at the same time, that also opens up the entire idea that a nation is that America is a nation founded on men with common ideas, not with, like, necessarily common ancestry to common ethnicities, you know what I mean? Like, with common ideas. And right. And all of the laws, all the things that our country was founded on were created by men. Where they're all the mm-hmm. everything that our country is founded on ideas and ideals. That's what America is founded on. And these ideas and ideals are things that are, it's great that we have, like I said, a baseline of understanding of this is who we are and what we identify by. You know, the freedom of speech, the, you know, all of the Bill of Rights and everything. But the fact that they're created by men means that they can be changed and tweaked and interpreted mm-hmm. differently by men as man progresses through life. And I think that is...
It should be.
Yeah. And I think that's how it should be in this, you know, this great experiment. And so, like, when we start talking about the issue of gun violence and approaching it from a gun control perspective, there's a lot of people out there who say that we cannot, as Americans, talk about gun control. We cannot do it because we are barred from it because of who we are as a people. Mm-hmm. And I don't buy that, because who we are as a people is bound by ideas and ideals, by nothing else. And so, and those ideas and ideals can change. They can. And so, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, I think there's ways that we can certainly, you know, respect the Second Amendment. Well, we can respect the way that we currently interpret the Second Amendment, because I think there's a lot of argument to be made that the Founding Fathers didn't envision anything, you know, of what we have now. But while also being very reasonable about it, by having some common sense restrictions, by doing things, by putting, you know, the actual lives of other human beings, by putting the fact that this mass shooting thing is something that is very unique to America, by recognizing that, you know, that there is a strong correlation between a shitload of guns and a shitload of mass shootings, mm-hmm. a thing that doesn't happen in other countries, I think that it's okay for us to take all this and put that above this belief that the Second Amendment as is right now is this binding glue that's holding the Republic together. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, and I'm gonna go radical leftist here. Everything that you ever feared, and say that I have, not you, Matt, but you know, whoever's listening and thinking, my goodness, these people. I think that the Second Amendment is actually kind of nonsensical, because I think that when formulating fundamental rights, it has to be something that has to do with the innate nature of the being, and mm-hmm. the Second Amendment has to do with an invented mechanism that has, you know, it never needed to exist at all. Mm-hmm. And so you can say maybe we have a right to defend ourselves,
sure.
But saying that we have a right to own any particular fabrication of human ingenuity is absurd, and I don't think that it's doing us any good. But between my extreme terrifying leftist position and the idea that nothing needs to change, there is a huge, huge area, a huge middle ground. And so, you know, even if people don't agree with me that the amendment should be repealed, I think we still need to argue that something has to change. Mm-hmm. And you when you mentioned America being different and our founding, one of the things that's particular to our founding is that we were in fact founded with guns, and then mm-hmm. we proceeded to make our way across the continent with guns, believing it to be our divine right. And I think that this mythos of the firearm has become part of American identity in a way that isn't in other countries, which is why when you're talking to a European who hunts, the European, you know, may have guns and may occasionally go out hunting, but finds our attitude towards guns absolutely bizarre.
Of course.
Why do you need so many? Why are you so excited about your gun? Why are you getting your gun out and showing us right now? Why are you getting all worked up about it? I mean, it's in poor taste anyway.
Sure.
But it's an extra poor taste when you think about the fact that this is a dangerous implement that's intended for killing.
Yeah.
And when you look at it from the perspective of other countries, you start to realize that we're making ourselves rather absurd.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And at the same time, allowing many young people to be killed.
And I'll be honest, as far as what you're talking about, like this whole like idea that the gun is very much an American thing, like, it's true. Like, it's like, I look, there's a, like, we have a museum complex here in town, and one of them is like mm-hmm. a natural history museum, which is super cool. We go to it all the time. But the other one is called the Berman Museum, and it is a war museum. It is a museum that is full. This guy had this huge collection. He had been overseas and fought in like World War II. His huge collection of crazy memorabilia from the war. And I mean, and there are just like old guns, everything from like original firearms made in like the 1400s to like all the way up through like Vietnam and stuff, like legitimate like weaponry. And it is the coolest museum in the world. I admit that. Like, it is so cool. I love going to it. I will read every little bitty card under every little bitty firearm and read about the history. I don't know what it is. I think it's cool as hell. I really truly do. And it's just interesting to me. It's just so interesting to me. And but there's all, to be fair, there's also like really cool stuff. Like, we have like Napoleon's hair set. Yeah, like his whole like little beauty set is freaking awesome, and a lot of really cool stuff from like the American West, an original Gatling gun. Like, it's really like, there's like some really cool artifacts in this museum. Yeah. If you're ever in Alabama, you should definitely come check it out. Especially if you have any interest in just like military history at all, it's very cool. But anyways, the thing is, it's cool to me, and like I love my violent movies and my violent video games. I love those things. I do. I love like Tomb. I've been dying to watch like Tombstone recently. Tombstone, The Departed, Gangs of New York. Very American movies are some of my favorite movies. It's ingrained in us. It's weird. And it's weird for me to be able to understand that, like, I have that in me. Like, I'm always going to think that this stuff is kind of cool. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I also understand, and this is the thing that I try to stress to, you know, that I think my parents did a good job stressing me, and that I stress to my kids and stuff, is that there's a difference between this interest in the sort of like historical aspect, the sort of abstract way of looking at the history of firearms, the history of war. If that's something that's interesting to you, even if it is very American and ingrained in you, there's a difference between this interest in it and then this obsession with having it. And owning it, and this obsession with this revolutionary, you know, obsession, this attitude that one day you're going to need your gun to stand up for the second revolution and fight tyranny because America and blah, 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 blah. And I think that's, you know, it's because it is ingrained in us, but at the same time, I think we've got to understand that so much of the coolness aspect of this, the thing that we think, because I really do, the thing that scares me about all these people who are so obsessed with retaining like maximum liberalism with gun rights, and I mean liberalism from a classical sense, not the modern sense, like this just extreme, like, no rules, Americans have the right to bear arms no matter what, we can't do any, you know, any kind of gun restrictions, anything like that. I'm afraid that a lot of this stuff is rooted in these action movie fantasies that they're one day gonna be able to like Red Dawn, you know what I mean, that they get this like Red Dawn, great movie by the way, but like the fact that they're gonna be able, like, have this Red Dawn thing one day, or that they're gonna, you know, be the guy that saves someone in a shootout, or they're gonna be the guy that storms into a building where they're gonna be the ones that foil a mass shooting attack. I'm afraid that a lot of this obsession with the Second Amendment and this inability to reason about it, this inability to reason about a very real need for realistic and common sense gun control, this ability to even consider that, I'm afraid it's based more in fantasy than it is any real concern or consideration consideration for American law.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's pure fantasy to think that you're going to defend yourself against our army with, you know, your little rifle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're going to send drones after you. And, you know, if one does actually think that one is up against a tyrannical government, you know, with the Trump crowd, and I don't think it's so much Trump as it is the alt-right kind of using him as a puppet, mm-hmm. it's a legitimate question to ask.
Sure, of course.
But I don't think that I'm going to defend myself from these people by stockpiling weapons. I think that would be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I also want to note that the people who are very enthusiastic about this fantasy scenario in which we, you know, rush with our guns up against the invading forces of the tyrannical government become very uncomfortable when it's a woman, a leftist, mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, any of these people saying, yeah, you know what, you're right. Yeah, you know what, maybe we need guns. You know, every time Black Lives Matter does anything remotely accidentally violent, if they break a window, there is this tremendous outcry against them. Mm-hmm. And yet they're doing what, you know, they're for the most part peacefully doing what we have a constitutional right to do, mm-hmm. You know, banding together, freedom of speech, standing up against injustice. And imagine if they were to do so with guns and claim Second Amendment rights. I bet you you'd see the Second Amendment called into question very rapidly there. And so, yeah, I think, I don't know if you saw any of the articles that were going around about the kind of racist history of the Second mm-hmm. Amendment.
Yeah.
Did you read any of those?
I did. I've actually looked at a lot. I mean, there's a lot of interesting articles about that right now that, you know, not just about the racist history of it, but about, you know, whether or not the founders really believed or whether the founders interpreted the Second Amendment when they wrote it, whether or not they interpreted it the same way that mm-hmm. we do now.
Yeah. I mean, as a literary scholar, at a certain point, I'm like, well, you know, do we really want to make the entire text reducible to the intentions of the writers of the text?
Sure.
Because we don't think that way anymore. I mean, 300 years in some respects isn't a very long time, but 300 years changes our way of thinking about so many things. Mm-hmm. And so to even, you know, and I strongly suspect that they didn't intend it. Like,
of course not.
But even if they did, that can't be the whole of adherence to a written law.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that, and the fact that for so much of our history, the need for the firearm was associated with the need of a white man to intimidate abolitionists, to threaten slaves, or to, you know, take land away from the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. So, it goes back all that long period of time, and it's present today still. It's present whenever we see a black man armed, and all of a sudden he becomes a menace, whereas a white man armed is a symbol of our country.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting to me too, because like you talk about, you know, not necessarily always, you know, you talk about not necessarily focusing entirely on the on what the original, you know, what the founders would have originally meant with it, because, you know, mm-hmm. so much time passing by, you know, and the thing is, I agree with that. That's actually my base primary argument for why gun control needs to be on the table, is because the law was written 300 years ago when things were very different, and that we cannot judge things based off of what things that happened through. Just because the founders had some good ideas doesn't necessarily mean that everything they wrote was gospel. It's not, you know, the Constitution is not the catechism. But you have to, when you're debating this with people who outrightfully reject that idea completely, you know, you do kind of have to look at things from, okay, well, if that's not the way that they're going to do it, you have to try to find a way to argue your point to them, in a way to sort of get them to move in that direction. Cause at the end of the day, like, I don't care what the founders really thought about it. Like, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't make, these are people who also thought owning other people were okay. Like, they didn't have, like, they didn't have it all together. And so, like, yes, I think that they were right about some things. I think that they were absolutely right about things like the freedom of speech, the freedom to, the freedom of the press, the freedom of association, like, all the, like, you know, all of the, they had a lot of great ideas. The Seventh Amendment, one that doesn't get talked about enough. The Fifth Amendment, which absolutely no one should ever feel ashamed for utilizing because it's your right as an American. These are all great ideas, but that doesn't necessarily mean that just because some of it is great, all of it is infallible. I think that we have to look at the entire document bit by bit as we progress, you know, as a people, as a nation, whatever, as we progress and say, you know, do these laws still fit with our, you know, with the things that matter in our time, with the needs of the people, with the makeup of the people, with the way that technology has increased? Are these things still relevant? And I understand some people might see that as a slippery slope. And to that, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, you know, because I don't know. I mean, the answer apparently, if you know, is either do absolutely nothing or change everything. And I don't necessarily think it has to be that. I think that we can take things on a case-by-case basis. And just utilizing reason and a little bit of responsibility and a little bit of empathy, I think that we can keep it from being a slippery slope by just being sensible about things, by just looking at the world and saying, does this fit for us right now? Does it matter? Is it truly for the best interest of the people? And, you know, and I think we can achieve that. I think that, you know, there is an obvious correlation between the amount of guns and the accessibility of guns and the amount of gun violence that we have. And that goes for all amounts of guns. That means your muggings, that means your suicides, that means your accidents, and that means your mass shootings. Yeah. That means all of it. And it's just simple. I mean, good God, if you fill up your living room with knives, there's a really good chance you're going to get cut by one. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard. It's not a hard concept to grasp. It's really not. It's a very sensible thing. And I got to go back to the idea. I think that people are purposefully pushing back against reason, against very obvious reason. I think people are purposely pushing back and ignoring common sense and reason in favor of some of fantasy idea about what this country is founded on. So at the end of the day, for me, my closing argument, yep. At the end of the day for me, I'll say that, you know, I don't have a problem with guns. I don't have a problem with firearms. I don't have a problem with people owning things. You've probably heard this over and over again because just about everybody says it, but it's true that I don't have a problem with the right to bear arms. I don't have a problem with guns, but I do have a problem with how easy they are to get. I do have a problem with how easy they are to sell to people. I do have a problem with all the holes in the system right now. I do have a problem with the fact that I understand that AR doesn't stand for assault rifle, but I also understand that it's a weapon that is made to kill people. Don't bullshit me and tell me that this is made for hunting or this is made for anything other than combat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I grew up in Alabama. I got family that hunts. I got friends that hunted. I mean, when I was 12 years old, some of my best friends had their hunting rifles under their beds. Not a single one of them like an AR-15. It is a rifle that is made for combat. It is a rifle that is made to kill people. It is a rifle that is made to mow down as many people as quickly as possible. It has all the modifications for it. I don't care there's other rifles that are semi-automatic, whatever, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. This one in particular is made to kill people as quickly as possible. So I agree with increasing background checks. I agree with waiting periods. I agree with raising the ages. I agree with bans on high capacity clips, and I agree with banning this rifle. Okay, that's it. That's it for me.
Sorry. Amen, brother. Yeah, and I just want to close with one thing, which is that people think that you need to be part of some nefarious group with a mysterious desire to end guns because you hate guns. And I've said this before, I actually like guns. Mm-hmm. I like shooting.
They're cool.
I don't like the AR. I like old-fashioned guns, but, you know, I used to post pictures of myself with firearms on Facebook. This is not me coming from a deep nefarious place. This is me saying, oh, wait, this thing that I like is really dangerous in the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. And so whatever I happen to feel about it isn't really important. Mm-hmm. The important thing is doing what's right.
Right.
All of the laws that you've suggested, everything that you've suggested, this needs to be put in place because I am being objective. And the people who are accusing me of coming from some conspiracy theory are the ones who are being hysterical and emotional over their guns.
I think this is something that we need to keep talking about, and as we get back into a consistent habit of posting episodes, because we are, we're going to get back into that habit. But I think that it's something we have to keep talking about, because the momentum. We talked about this last time. The last time there was a major shooting, we talked about how, you know, we were going to, you know, this was going to go through the news for a little bit, and blah 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 blah, and then it was going to disappear, and it did. It did, and so I think that we. I think that we have to keep talking about it. And the fact that we have this movement, the fact that we have this these kids right now that are doing that are organizing, and they're doing everything they can to actually do something about this issue. I think we need to support that. I think we need to continue talking about it. And I think we need to make sure that we don't stop talking about it this time. So. So yeah, so that's all for us tonight.
That's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. That's all for us tonight. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to tune in next time. We'll see you then.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
I learned how many people we could help and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving, so I want to give.
These kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families. Children love it because they experience different cultures and gain a lasting impression of the people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit crsricebowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and to pray for those who are less fortunate.
The Cincinnati Catholic Men's Conference is back. Tickets are on sale now for Saturday, April 28th at the Taft Theater at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. The speaker conference roster is being hailed as one of the best lineups in the country. In rare appearances, come see Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN, the man motivator Father Larry Richards, former Moeller High School and University of Notre Dame head football coach Jerry Faust, and the big celebrity keynote, Baz Rutten, UFC world champion, MMA world champ, and movie star. The conference theme is What It Means to Be a True Christian Man in Today's Society. Don't miss the incredible day of motivation, spiritual benefit, and fellowship with men from all walks of life. Get tickets now at cincinnatimensconference.com or call 513-214-1534. That's cincinnatimensconference.com or 513-214-1534. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.